This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
In our membership drive, and we urge you to become a member by calling 877-500-5266. I'm Liam Delta.
And I'm Linda Olson Osterlund. A recent study says that coal trains traveling through the Columbia Gorge have been causing environmental damage. The Columbia Riverkeepers say that their tests confirm that coal from the trains is blanketing the area around the tracks and moving towards the river. Although no more than 4 coal trains a day pass through the region, the industry is seeking 5 new export terminals to transport the material from Montana and Wyoming to Asia. Those extra terminals would bring another dozen trains a day through the Columbia Gorge, carrying an additional 140 million tons of coal annually. Proponents of the coal trains say that because of a lack of information, the issue is being blown out of proportion. An industry spokeswoman stresses that additional trains will be treated to prevent coal loss and will bring thousands of jobs to the region. Further study from the coal industry and regulatory agencies is expected.
If they were kids, there would be 4 candles on the birthday cakes of Oregon's newest federal wilderness areas tomorrow. A dozen sites received these protections on March 30th of 2009. In collaboration with the Oregon News Service, KBOO's Bill Riley has more on the story.
This weekend is the 4th anniversary of creating Oregon's newest wilderness areas. They include the Badlands near Bend and Spring Basin near the John Day River in north-central Oregon. The Badlands encompass 29,000 acres and are popular with hikers and horseback riders, with 50 miles of trails through the stark remnants of an ancient volcano. 4 years ago, David Edelston, with Friends of the Oregon Badlands, says he was part of a group of volunteers and BLM workers pulling up old fence posts in the area to donate as firewood for the poor when someone's cell phone rang.
We received a phone call that President Obama had actually signed the bill creating wilderness. So I think that we, probably the only group in the United States that went in to a wilderness study area, and we hiked out of a fully declared wilderness. So I think we made history that day.
In all, Oregon gained a dozen new wilderness areas as part of the Omnibus Public Land Management Act of 2009, including Soda Mountain near Ashland, Copper Salmon in the Siskiyou National Forest, and 8 areas in the vicinity of Mount Hood. Nationwide, 2 million acres were designated in 9 states. True to its name, Spring Basin comes to life in the spring with carpets of colorful wildflowers that attract hikers, climbers, and photographers to its canyons and hilltops. The wilderness area itself is less than 6,400 acres, but Jefferson Jacobs with the Oregon Natural Desert Association explains it is surrounded by tribal-run lands that also have some protections in place.
Spring Basin is a really neat example of conservation where one size doesn't fit all. Some may have grazing on it, some may not, some is open to vehicles, some is not. But it is all protected in one way or another.
In all of Oregon's wilderness and conservation areas, volunteers put in thousands of hours in partnership with the federal agencies that manage them. Edelston says with budget cutbacks, there's been plenty to do.
Removing obsolete barbed wire fence, maintaining of trails and trailheads, installing signs, reinstalling vandalized signs, and outreach programs to have people let the light of wilderness into their souls.
In collaboration with the Oregon News Service, this is Bill Riley with KBOO News.
Yesterday, the Oregon Supreme Court decided not to hear an appeal from a local company seeking to develop a liquid natural gas plant in Clatsop County. The company, Oregon LNG, plans to export liquid natural gas, which is extracted through controversial fracking techniques, through Oregon to Asian markets. In 2010, Clatsop County commissioners approved an initial permit for the company to construct a 41-mile pipeline. By 2011, however, a new group of commissioners reversed that decision, citing public safety and salmon protections. Oregon LNG attempted and failed to challenge that reversal before the State Court of Appeals, a decision the state Supreme Court affirmed yesterday by choosing not to review the case. Opponents of fracking say this decision will make the plant's construction unlikely.
The Portland Business Journal reports that a development project on Hayden Island has been resurrected. Like Godzilla rising out of the Columbia River, the Salpair Bay luxury condominium project on the east end of Hayden Island has come back to life as a new apartment project. Michael DeFries, a Vancouver, Washington developer, saw his 240-unit luxury condo and marina project get swamped in the Great Recession's early days. The original project, located on Northeast Tomahawk Drive, sank when leaders of the developer pulled the plug on funds for a $63.5 million loan. DeFries builder, J.E. Dunn Northwest, walked off the job and later won a $4 million lawsuit for unpaid bills. This month, DeFries submitted plans and permits to resurrect the project as a 300-plus unit apartment complex on the same site. Representatives of the Hayden Island Neighborhood Association expressed concerns to KABU about emergency vehicle access and that the project could double from the promised 204 units to 400 when houseboat slips are included. Permits obtained from the City of Portland cover two of the five planned apartment buildings.
The Oregon International Air Show issued an apology today regarding volunteer recruitment language on its website that drew accusations of racism. The apology follows an email campaign that drew attention to the website's call for volunteers to help with the air show scheduled to start the end of July. While the air show's website says that, quote, several volunteer opportunities are available, end quote, as of yesterday, the website asked volunteers who were not fluent in English to only sign up for ground maintenance duties. Here is Judy Willey, president of the Oregon International Air Show, responding to accusations of racist language on their website.
I would like to really address that statement in itself. We use volunteers who can't speak fluent English in a lot of areas. And the statement that was put in our website is an error on our part, and we removed it immediately when it was brought to our attention, and we apologize for that profusely because it shouldn't have been said the way it was, and it did come across as insensitive.
Willie says that she personally apologized to the people she received emails from. While the president of the air show maintains that the organization is inclusive, she added that some volunteer positions with the air show do require expertise in areas related to aircraft. The Oregon International Air Show begins on July 26th in Hillsboro.
KABU volunteers have stepped up their game to bring you this locally produced newscast every evening. Now we ask you to do the same. Joining us now are Lynn and Dan to talk about how you can support KABU Community Radio.
And here we are. I'm Dan, and Lynn is right next to me. Lynn, I have a question for you. Why is it that people donate to KABU?
Oh, people donate to KABU for a variety of reasons, but they're always their own reasons. They're not our reasons. And I actually would like to take this moment to thank a few people who have recently called us and contributed and renewed and became new members. There's Travis in Washougal and Philip in Gladstone, Matthew in Northeast Portland, and Patricia in Northeast Portland. Thank you so much.
Because these people have, for their very own reasons, decided that they wanted to continue a relationship with KABU. And we are eternally grateful for that. So we say thank you, just as Lynn has. And you, too, can receive a great big thank you from us by simply picking up the phone and dialing 877-500-5266 or go online to kboo.fm. And you know, this news is brought to us by volunteers, and volunteers are working as engineers, and they're answering the telephone, and they're the receptionist that you see as you walk in the door. Volunteers comprise the bulk of the staff here at KABU. We have a small paid staff, but it's all volunteer-driven. This news was put together by volunteers. They researched the stories. They wrote the stories. They developed the stories. They did everything to bring the story to your listening ear, and we're thankful for that. And more than just that alone, there is an army of volunteers that continually does their job on a day-in, day-out basis. And perhaps you're wondering, can I become a part of that list of volunteers? You most certainly can. All you have to do is attend our next orientation session and then, as they say, pick your poison. But it starts by you first picking up the phone, dialing 877-500-5266, or you can go online to kboo.fm, and it's as easy as that, including stopping by our studios at 20 Southeast 8th. Pick up the phone. Do it right now, 877-500-5266.
Starting Monday, publicly held entities like school districts and cities will have a new option to deposit amounts greater than $250,000 into nonprofit credit unions as opposed to commercial banks. The change is due to a law passed in 2010 as the Public Funds Collateralization Program for Credit Unions. But a trio of bills the Oregon Bankers Association is promoting in Salem, most notably House Bill 2486, are aimed at countering that change. What the bill would do is require credit unions to pay taxes under the guidelines of a for-profit financial firm. While no sponsor of the bill is listed, the legislation got its first reading in mid-January and awaits review from the Revenue Committee, chaired by Phil Barnhart, a Democrat representing Central Lane and Linn counties. The Northwest Credit Union Association contends the political maneuvering is a reflection of how more traditional institutions view the idea of competition as less than favorable.
A proposal in the Washington State Senate would extend state financial aid to undocumented college students, including those granted deferred action by federal immigration authorities. But the measure may be stalled in the Senate after the Republican leader of the Higher Education Committee, Barbara Bailey of Oak Harbor, wrote today that it might be too expensive. Bailey argued in an op-ed in Washington Focus, a pro-business blog, that the state doesn't have enough funds for every student who applies for the state need grants. For a decade, Washington has offered in-state tuition to state residents regardless of immigration status. House Bill 1817, called the Washington State Dream Act, passed the Washington House earlier this month. It expands two financial aid programs to undocumented students. A majority of the senators on the Higher Education Committee support the bill, according to an Associated Press report, but Bailey will determine whether the bill comes up for a vote. Oregon passed an in-state tuition bill for undocumented students earlier this week, and Governor John Kitzhaber is expected to sign the measure next week. The Federal DREAM Act, which would provide a path to citizenship for undocumented college students and other immigrant youth, is a key component of congressional negotiations on a comprehensive immigration reform bill.
This week was a historic one in the movement for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer rights. The Supreme Court heard arguments Tuesday on the constitutionality of Proposition 8, the 2008 California ballot initiative that banned same-sex couples from getting married. On Wednesday, the justices were presented with briefs for and against the Defense of Marriage Act, which prohibits the federal government from recognizing same-sex marriages that are legal in 9 states and the District of Columbia. While the Supreme Court proceedings were underway, thousands of people gathered on Capitol Hill to rally in support of equal rights for people of all sexual orientation. FSRN's Anna Simonton spoke to demonstrators on the scene for this report.
Right now!
Right now!
We are!
Somebody!
Somebody!
We deserve!
Today is Bonnie and my 31st anniversary, this actual day. So we decided the fact that the DOMA oral arguments were today was a sign and that we should come down here and observe our anniversary.
My partner and I are out here today to to show our support and to fight for our right to get married and for me to be able to stay in the United States. I think it's something like 40 or 50,000 couples, binational couples, in the 10 American states that allow gay marriage now, that are married or about to get married, but who are not able to stay within the United States because DOMA prevents immigration law from allowing a gay person to sponsor a green card for their spouse.
I hopped at 4:40 a.m. at a Penn Station this morning to be here. My wife of only 2 months is currently deployed overseas, and she's a captain of the Marine Corps. We've been together for 9 years, and with the passing of marriage equality in New York, that was a fantastic beginning, but obviously because of DOMA, there are many different incentives as a military spouse and as a couple that we are unfortunately denied. So I'm here to help fight for housing allowance and help to fight for medical and dental insurance and death benefits. And damn it, I want a military ID to get on that base. That's why I'm here.
Rob and I are planning to retire, but we ask ourselves, what will happen should one of us become ill, disabled, or God forbid, die? Illness, disability, and death could spell disaster simply because our marriage is not recognized. We should have the same rights and benefits that every other legally married couple in this country enjoys and counts on in tough times.
I'm here to help to support my moms.
I'm out here because I'm supporting my two moms and
hope, family, right?
Yeah, and my family.
For our kids, just with being able to have equal benefits, you know, access to Social Security, if something were to happen to my wife, to be able to provide more for my kids, it would just make so much more sense for us and would help them kind of understand the world and that they're not any different. You know, our family's no different from anybody else.
This part right now is for that young brother or that young sister who is gay and lesbian and couldn't take it no more. And they took their lives. This is for that young brother and that young sister who's queer, who was afraid to tell their mama or their daddy that they wanted to marry somebody who they love. This is for that young person or that old person who's been dealing with this and had to go to their family and sit everybody down and tell them that I love this person and I want to be with this person for the rest of my life. This is for them.
Those were the voices of Faye Jacobs, Anna Olson, Nicole Connolly, David Wilson, Madison Kennedy, Zach Kennedy, Christy Kennedy, and the Reverend Lennox Yearwood Jr., who rallied outside the U.S. Supreme Court. This piece was recorded and produced by Anna Simonton for Free Speech Radio News.
You're listening to a membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. KBOO volunteers work hard every day to bring you this coverage of local, national, and international news. Now it's your turn. Joining us now are Lynn and Dan to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
And we're back. Hi, everybody. I'm Dan, along with Lynn. And the first thing I want to tell you about is that shirt. That is a really cool shirt. You could wear that shirt down the street around town and people would take notice and they'd really think it's cool because, you know what, we love the fact that Portland's weird and we want to keep it weird, but this shirt is a statement too. It's about the longevity of KBOO in this community, and you can have that shirt with your $90 gift. We'd love to give it to you. All you have to do is pick up the phone, dial 877-500-5266. You can do it online also, kboo.fm. Look to the upper right part of the screen, and you'll click on that tip jar. And we have so many ways of saying thank you for your comfortable contribution to sustaining KBOO. Lynn, why don't you talk about some of those thank yous?
Some of those thank yous. We have the Democracy Now! Shirt, and that is available for $120 minimum donation. We've got those black Boo Air shirts with the very colorful, you know, board on the front. And that's very limited quantity still, and that's a $60 minimum donation. We've got a couple of the True Vine t-shirts that are becoming somewhat of collector items, very few of those left. And we've got that shirt, which is guaranteed to ignite conversations wherever you go.
Sage green?
Sage green, black lettering, and electric blue highlights. You can see that shirt right on the website. If you go to the homepage, it's right there, the front and the back.
And you can have that shirt, for $90. For your $90 gift to KBOO, that shirt will be yours. Lynn, we also need to thank some of our food vendors as well.
Oh, that's right. Our businesses that have supported us with food donations today are Bridges Cafe and Catering, 2716 Northeast Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard, iBlog Grill, which is at 1660 Southeast 3rd Avenue, and City Thai, 6341 Southwest Capitol Highway. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. And, you know, we have, I don't know where that sheet went, but you wonder about the news stories that are developed here. And one of our news folks brought out to us some of the stories that have been covered since our membership drive began. Lynn, why don't you touch on a few of those stories and tell us a little bit about them.
You know, as we've been saying, the news is produced all by volunteers, and it's both international, national, and local coverage. One of the stories that has been covered by KBOO almost exclusively is the coverage of protests against the removal of a sequoia tree in Pier Park. I happen to live in that neighborhood. And it's not just one tree. Actually, it appears that the plans for that, which KBOO is covering, include a very large roadway through the grove of sequoias. So that's an ongoing story that KBOO is covering. There's also been the story of the Portland Solidarity Network of Housing Advocates delivering a letter of demands to a local landlord. And there's, where's that one? Oh, reaching out to Food and Water Watch to cover the campaign to label GMO foods.
Now, here's the significance of those stories and so many other stories that we report on. These are stories that you will only hear on KBOO. Mainstream media will not report or go into any in-depth of any of these stories. They may gloss over one or two of them, but they won't give you the really cold, hard truth of them. That's the significance of what you get from being a part of the KBOO community. And we really want your support. We need your support. And so if you pick up the phone right now and say, I want to be a part of that change, all you have to do is dial 877-500-5266, or you can go online to kboo.fm. And it's exciting. It's fun. It's not anything that is, you know, down and dark and dirty, but it's really right there. What you see is what you get. And we've been doing it for 45 years. Imagine that. There are a number of radio stations that I know of that are no longer in existence because they didn't last that long, basically because they didn't have something to offer people and they could not sustain themselves. We sustain ourselves with your help. Pick up the phone, 877-500-5266.
You are listening to an hour-long membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. We'd like to remind you that you can call to renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during the program by calling 877-500-5266. Now, stay tuned for Bread and Roses at 6 for a discussion with Pacific Northwest author Jenny Shortridge about her new novel, Love, Water, Memory. At 7, it's a recording of Dr. Michelle Alexander, author of The New Jim Crow, speaking in Portland at Emmanuel Temple earlier this year. Tomorrow's weather is clear with temperatures in the mid-70s through the weekend.
It's 5:28. Time for daily commentary from Jim Hightower.
Maybe you think that your real economic worth is being undervalued these days, even disrespected by the powers that be. Well, you're hardly alone. Wait till you hear the tragic story of how Al-Waleed bin Talal has been dissed. He is Prince Al-Waleed, a full-fledged member of Saudi Arabia's royal family. The 57-year-old describes himself as the, quote, world's foremost value investor. Indeed, the royal one owns sizable stakes in such premium properties as London's posh Savoy Hotel, Apple Computer, Citigroup, and Rupert Murdoch's News Corp empire. He's even buying a soccer team. But is he getting the respect he's due? No, at least not from Forbes magazine. In its annual ranking of the world's super rich, Forbes relegates bin Talal way down to 26th place, estimating his wealth at a mere $20 billion. An outrageous insult, shrieked the wounded prince, who dwells in a 420-room mansion in Riyadh, is flown around in his own Boeing 747 jumbo jet, has a yacht bigger than most hotels, and possesses 200 cars, including collections of Rolls-Royces, Ferraris, and Lamborghinis. His true wealth, he explains in exasperation, is nearly $30 billion, which would rank him as the world's 10th richest human, ahead of such run-of-the-mill billionaires as the Waltons of Walmart Money, Michael Bloomberg, and Sheldon Adelson, a tacky casino operator, for God's sake. Prince Al-Waleed was so rankled by the misranking that he wrote to Steve Forbes himself, demanding that his name be removed entirely from Forbes' plutocratic listing. Moreover, declared the peaked prince, he will not cooperate in the future with the magazine's wealth valuation inspectors. This is Jim Hightower saying, so, if you're feeling disrespected, put your indignation in perspective by thinking of this poor prince.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at hightowerlowdown.org.
The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency released a plan today to cut the amount of sulfur and nitrogen oxides in gasoline. The agency calculates these measures will significantly reduce air pollution, prevent thousands of premature deaths and illnesses, and make new cars and trucks sold in the country more efficient. But oil and gas corporations are mobilizing a lobbying blitz to delay or kill this and other environmental regulations. In Washington, D.C., FSRN's Alice Olstein has more.
The EPA's new draft rule strengthens existing controls on the pollution that comes out of the tailpipes of cars and trucks, namely sulfur, nitrogen oxides, volatile organic compounds, carbon monoxide, benzene, and fine particles, all of which create the familiar smog and soot that blankets many major cities. Luke Tonichel with the Natural Resources Defense Council says both oil and gas corporations and car manufacturers will have to make changes to comply with the rule starting in 2017.
The fuel providers, the oil industry, would, in some of their refineries, many of their refineries already meet the requirements, put in some processes to take that sulfur out. And the automakers need to optimize their exhaust systems to reduce those pollutants from the tailpipe.
The agency estimates that once the rule is fully implemented, the reduced emissions will save up to 2,400 premature deaths every year. Janice Nolan with the American Lung Association says that's a conservative estimate. Based on studies by her organization, the rule could have a far greater impact in preventing death and illness, especially in children.
When we're born, we still have about 80% of our lungs to develop, and they continue to grow until we're teenagers and are fully grown. So most of your lungs actually came into being after you were breathing all the air that you have in your community. So children are exposed to more pollution too, because they're often more active. They're playing outside more, and it's the kind of impact that may happen in their childhood, but could affect the way their lungs develop, that could impact them the rest of their lives. It could put them at higher risk of developing lung diseases later on, for example.
The new standards will save the country between $8 and $23 billion in annual health costs, according to the EPA's calculation. Nolan says the changes will have the biggest impact on the health of people living near busy highways, which have higher levels of these dangerous pollutants.
And we do find people who live near these major highways or in big urban areas are often more likely low income. And low income people are more harmed by pollution. Sometimes it's because they live near a major road or near a source of pollution. And sometimes it's because they have less access to care.
Though California and nearly a dozen other states voluntarily adopted these cleaner gasoline standards last year, the fossil fuel industry is mobilizing to delay their national implementation. Representatives from American Fuel and Petroleum Manufacturers and the American Petroleum Association, as well as several members of Congress who've received large donations from these industries, have spoken out against the rule. Chair of the Energy and Power Subcommittee introduced a bill last year to stop the agency from moving forward with this proposal, and several Congress members wrote the president this year asking for a delay. Their main argument is that it will cost refineries too much money to convert to cleaner fuel, a cost that could be passed on to consumers. But the NRDC's Tonichel says the industry has used the same lobbying and messaging tactics to oppose nearly all past environmental regulations, yet their warnings have not proven accurate.
I think we've seen in many regulatory areas where the industry overestimates the cost of compliance just because, you know, they're heavily focused on their profits. But yet, when it comes down to having a standard, they innovate to meet that standard, and costs typically come in much lower than the original estimates.
The EPA estimates that the rules will only cost refiners 1 penny per gallon of gas and will increase the price of the average car by $130. Once the proposal is published in the Federal Registry in the next few weeks, the agency will hold a 30-day public comment period and several public hearings before proposing a final rule. Alice Holstein, Free Speech Radio News, Washington.
The Environmental Protection Agency